Hello, world. This is Chris Abalo's podcast experiment, and I am Chris Abalo. Welcome to the show. Hope everybody had a happy Thanksgiving. Forgot to really make a statement about that last week. That's okay. I'm sure everybody enjoyed it. American Thanksgiving. I'm sure you had a fine time, and hope you didn't go crazy with shopping like so many people. Man, I was last Sunday, I saw people camped out at Best Buy. I mean, that's what, 4 days in advance? Because now everybody opens up on Thanksgiving. I don't understand it. I'm thrilled I don't work in retail anymore. And, well, let's just hope you didn't go too crazy. Let's hope you did your shopping through Amazon, one of the sponsors of the show. Please make sure you visit chrisabalo.com, click support the show, clear your browser cookies, then click through our Amazon banner and bookmark it, because as you may know, or if you don't, I'm going to tell you, Amazon gives us a small commission on purchases you make using the show's Amazon link. So if you bookmark it, every time you shop at Amazon, you won't pay a penny more for your purchases, but Amazon will give us a little taste of your purchase, and that will go to support the show. So if you're not already using the Amazon banner, do it now. Get your holiday shopping done from home. It's much better that way. You don't need to worry about driving and dealing with crowds and parking spaces and all the other crap you'd... Let's face it, you have enough holiday stress as it is. We're only 3 weeks away from Christmas, Hanukkah, and everything else that's going on. You don't want to deal with all that. Do your shopping at Amazon. Once again, chrisabalo.com. Click support the show. Visit Amazon and all of our other sponsors. And by the way, if you're not currently using Amazon Prime, you should be. And you can also, on that same page, sign up for a free 30-day trial for Amazon Prime, which includes free 2-day shipping. It's the holidays. Get the stuff you order faster. Get it in plenty of time for you to wrap it or make somebody else wrap it or whatever. But get it to your door in plenty of time so you don't need to worry about crazy shipping schedules. And, oh, when's it going to arrive and what days aren't the post office... Isn't the post office working or the other parcel delivery services? You don't want to have to worry about all that. You can just take advantage of the free 2-day shipping, free 1-day shipping, and same-day shipping in certain areas, too. If you live in a city like Los Angeles, like I do, then you can take advantage of same-day shipping if you meet the criteria for it, or 1-day shipping. Get the stuff the next day. It's totally worth it. Free for 30 days. It'll carry you through the holiday season. So click through the link to sign up for Amazon Prime if you're not already using it. If you are, you can give us a gift as well. We have a link for that too. Amazon is incredible for giving us all these opportunities for you to support the show, and you get free stuff. If you're not using Amazon Prime, 30 days, it's free. Take advantage of it. Sign up for it. If you don't keep it, you can cancel it. But once you have it, you're probably going to want to keep it. Plus, you can stream tons of movies, TV shows, music through Amazon Prime. You can stream shows like The Sopranos, the complete series of The Sopranos, Boardwalk Empire. HBO is a deal with Amazon where their content is available not on Netflix, but on Amazon Prime. And it's included with your membership. You can stream albums with Amazon Prime. Get the app for Amazon Music, Amazon Video, for your device of choice, your smartphone, your tablet, your PC, your Mac, whatever. Check out Amazon Prime. Everything that's included, it's way worth it. And again, free for 30 days. Get it through the holiday season and get your shipping. Get loads of content included with the free trial. You get the full access to Amazon Prime for those 30 days. So do it if you haven't done it already. Now, speaking of sponsors, if you've been listening to the show for the last year, you've heard me go on and on about Audible.com. And if you haven't signed up yet, this could very well make you do it. Because starting tomorrow, which is Tuesday, December 1st, there will be a special link on the homepage of chrisabalo.com to sign up for Audible and get 2 free audiobooks when you sign up, on top of a free 30-day trial to try out Audible. 2! That's twice as many as there normally are. So instead of the typical link, which is available on the Support the Show page, only on the homepage, you will find the link for 2 free audiobooks when you sign up for Audible.com during the month of December. So December 1st through December 31st, use the link at chrisabalo.com on the homepage. You'll see it. It's in the bottom right corner. Sign up for Audible. Download 2 free audiobooks. and start your free 30-day trial. Once again, you get the app for all your devices and begin enjoying a whole world of books. As I've said many times, over 180,000 titles available from audible.com across all genres, by the way. Biography, autobiography, romance, fiction, science fiction, all sorts of good stuff. I've been an Audible subscriber for 5 years now, and I love it. Currently listening to Adrenalized by Phil Collins, not Phil Collins, like the singer and the guy from Genesis, Phil Collins with an E-N, who's the guitar player, one of the guitar players, for one of my favorite bands, Def Leppard. He just put out an autobiography, so I'm currently working my way through that. Actually, by the time you hear this, I'll probably be done with it, because it's not an incredibly long book, but since Def Leppard is one of my favorites and have been lifelong favorites of mine, I'm running through it really, really quickly. So odds are by the time you hear this show, I'll probably be done with Adrenalized, which I, of course, recommend as one of your two free books, which you can get, once again, chrisabala.com. Click on the Audible link on the homepage. Two free audiobooks for signing up. Okay, now, with all the shilling out of the way, finally, I've gotten him after all this time. The great Rick Scarry is back on the show today and in the next episode. Now, I'm not trying to play this card, the two-part card, because it's somebody who people have been looking forward to, which is the truth. A lot of people have been looking forward to hearing from Rick again because people really enjoyed his appearance all the way back on Cape 4. Rick has been acting for the last 30-plus years, spent a lot of time in radio, and we talked quite a bit about it back in, again, Cape 4, which is May of 2013. So it's been over 2.5 years since his first appearance. I've had people ask for a long time, when is he going to come back on the show? You should have him back on. His stories were great. And you're absolutely right. His stories are great. So he's back. We ended up doing over an hour and a half. And because there's a lot of good stuff in there, aside from experience, there's a lot of good nuggets of wisdom. He'll probably smack me for saying this. But because of his experience and all the cool stuff he's done, he has a lot of good things to say about acting, about auditioning. He has a lot of great stories to tell about his experiences. And I figured, you know what, this will be more digestible if I split it into two parts. You could just listen for the straight hour and a half, but I was here and it was, you know, to kind of take everything in. And I know him socially. In fact, when you listen to it, it's just us laughing and talking because we're friends. Because of all that, we had a great chat and I thought, well, why not split this up into two episodes? Not because it was so highly anticipated. And I haven't pulled the two-parter card yet. I know there are shows that do it where they'll have an interview, particularly if it's someone big, and split it up into two shows so you have to listen or subscribe so you get part two right away. One in particular I can think of, they did an interview with one guest, and the show only posts every 2 weeks. So this one interview, which all in must have been an hour and a half, was split up into 20-minute segments that went out over the course of, and that's with an intro and an ending and the whole, you know, the whole thing, like I'm doing now, split it up and put it out in like 15 to 20 minute parts for a show that's released every other week. So while it's cool, like, hey, this show is covered for the next 10 weeks because it's going to be split up into 5 episodes. It's still like, man, this is going to take a while to get through this whole interview. But each individual segment stands on its own, so I kind of get that. But I haven't played the two-parter card yet, and I am for the purpose of, aside from the fact it's a great conversation and there's a lot of really, really good stuff, I thought two separate 45-minute chats, I figured that would be nice and digestible. You'll hear everything he has to say. And because of the amount of creative types and actors who listen to this show and like hearing from the various performers and other performers and writers who've been on the show, I figured, you know what? There's a lot here. There's a lot to absorb. It's something you can easily listen to a couple of times in the next week until part two comes up. So here it is, part one. And the next Monday, December 7th, will be part two of our little chat. And I'll be on at the end to say goodbye to you. But for now, let's talk to Rick. Specifically over the last year, as the show has grown, as the audience has grown exponentially, and people have caught up on the earlier episodes of the show, the first wave, there's one person who I've been asked over and over again when they're going to be back. When are you going to have Rick Scarry back on the show? Loved hearing about his experiences as an actor. Well, he's here right now.
I'm here?
You are.
Oh, well, yeah, I am here.
It's good to be here. Good to be anywhere.
Yes.
So, welcome back, Rick Scarry.
Thank you.
Welcome back, sir.
Now that you're sponsored, I'm assuming the check for the first appearance is in the mail?
It's post-dated, but it's on the way.
Good. I'm looking for that.
You know what's funny? I had a weird experience just before coming here. Not to tread into well-worn kind of comedian territory, but I was walking out, of a store, and just kind of turned to my left to go back to where I was parking, and there's a bum, to use a blanket term, and kind of walking in my direction. He goes, "Shecky!" And then I kind of paused for a heartbeat or two, and then I turned around and realized there was somebody coming up behind me, walking towards him. But for a second, I thought, do I look like a young Shecky Green? Like, it was a weird, just kind
of
a strange moment.
Yeah, as a matter of fact.
I've been called worse.
Yeah, you will be, too. Don't doubt that.
Around here, in this town, no chance. That was so fun. For all of you under 30, just look up Shecky Green, find out for yourself, and have a laugh.
Or maybe even under 50.
Maybe. Watch History of the World Part 1.
Yeah, there you go.
And play pick out the old-timey star. That was fun. Just for a moment, it was just, I paused for a second. Yes. I'm like, does this guy think, you know?
Oh, well.
Could have been worse. Anyway.
Yes.
So welcome back.
Thanks. It's nice to be back.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate
that. Nice to be anywhere. As the old joke used to go.
Nice to be booked somewhere, too.
Yes.
Booked in here to sit and chat about your experiences. Rick, if you haven't caught his first appearance on the show, all the way back on Cape 4, and we talk about tons of his experience in radio and Star Trek The Next Generation and Babylon 5. His sci-fi credentials are in order. Now trying to figure out comic book film credentials because, you know, that's a job to get.
That's true. I really haven't done any comic book movies.
Yet.
I was booked in one. Actually,
really?
I was. The one that went down in flames. I want to make sure I get the right one. Seth Rogen, Green Hornet.
Green Hornet,
okay. I'd been hired for a part on that movie, and when we made the deal, I kept saying, I'm not available in the month of September. Mm. I'm only available in the month of October because I had to be sound real braggadocio. I was in London doing something, and I couldn't do it until October. Mm-hmm. No problem. We made the deal. Everything was set. He was perfectly okay. And I'm in London one day, and my phone starts ringing in the middle of the night, and I pick it up. Hello? Is this Rick? Yeah. It's the second AD on the Green Hornet, and your call time for Monday is 6 a.m. And I'm going, no, I don't think it is.
Yeah.
And they go, what? I said, I'm not supposed to work until October, and I'm not available in September. Well, yeah, but they changed the schedule, so now you're going to work Monday. And I said, no, I'm not.
Or are you?
No, I'm not. See, I'm actually old enough and did okay enough to say, no, I don't think so.
Mm.
And she goes, you're not going to show up? I go, no, I'm not. Not unless you send in the G5 for me on Sunday afternoon, and then I'll show up and then bring me back that day, you know. And they go, well, no, nobody, what? I said, they always have a backup plan. Mm. There isn't a movie or TV show in the world that doesn't have a number two waiting in the wings. Give it to number two. And now I'm kind of glad I did.
Yeah, really.
And it's okay.
It leaves you open to not be.
Yeah, so maybe I'm not cut out for the comic book movies.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
We'll find one.
Well, now that there's going to be all in, like six a year across all the studios.
I know. I think, yes, it's never going to stop.
I think your odds have gone up.
They have gone up. Yeah,
well,
it's true.
It's funny, too, because like one of the things I was saying to, my mother complains, oh, everything's, you know, shoot 'em ups and, you know, action movies and blah, blah, blah. I said, well, action movies have been around for decades.
Oh,
I said,
from the beginning?
I said, well, once upon a time, I said, when you were growing up, it was all Westerns.
Yeah, cowboys, and Indians.
Yeah. And not only did those involve guns, but that was the era.
Like
that was what was mainstream at the time. And then it became,
you know, as it went into the 70s, it was more, you know, more serious, dramatic
pieces,
longer pieces. Yeah. And I said, you know, there's everything goes in stages. I said, right now it's films based on comic book properties.
That's absolutely true. So, flash bang with zillions of effects. You know?
I said, so that's the wave right now. It may not be your thing, but I said, everything kind of cycles, and there will be a point where like everything has a saturation point. And when there's a new movie every 8 weeks based on a comic property, I think it's going to die down a bit. And when they start to suck, obviously that's going to be
that's the end of everything. When it starts to suck,
that's when the nails go in the coffin lid.
Yeah, that's true.
Or at least they start, and then something else will pop up, and then they'll come back again one day.
If I'm going to be in one, I want to wear a mask and a cape, otherwise I'm not in tight pants, you know.
You don't want to play a minister or a politician roles?
No, I could be a bad guy though.
I've actually been
a handful of bad guys in my life.
Have you?
Yeah, I have.
In what?
Because
your IMDb credits is funny if you scroll through, and I'll put a link to it in the K78
post. You have to understand about IMDb, they're not exactly 100% true or correct.
That's true, too.
An enormous amount of stuff. Like, mm-hmm. they have me down for one episode of Murder, She Wrote, when in fact I did 8.
Mm.
So, but they don't, they're fact I don't know how they do that. I mean, they're pretty close to being accurate, but they miss a lot of stuff, and they're just not absolute. I always tell people, it's a great source, may not be true.
Yeah.
And if you have a couple of different names, a good friend of mine has two or three different names for movies and TV. Well, there's two or three different pages. They never put them all together as the same guy.
Oh, that's interesting.
And that happens, you know.
Sure. I think pre-internet,
there'd
be a lot more catching up to do. Like, you're listed for 2 episodes of Drew Carey, and you did like a baker's dozen. So.
Yeah. It's that was, and like soap operas. I've probably done hundreds of episodes of soap operas. And if you looked at that, it looks like I've done 12. You know, so but they don't list. They couldn't. They possibly list. You know, hundreds and hundreds of episodes of one show.
And every incidental character. To go back,
it doesn't work.
30 years, and update it.
But I'm happy it's there. It's a good source of information, just not always exactly right.
I'm sure there's some stuff lacking. I think now that and now it's grown to where it's at such a pace that anything from the last 10 years is probably accurate, and going forward will be.
Yeah, pretty close. I would say the last 10 years because. But then again, sometimes they miss things completely. I've been on shows, and they just never show up, you know? In fact, the show itself never shows up, which is odd to me. And so it's like, I don't know how they go about determining what goes on or what doesn't go on, because everything doesn't go on there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know what the credentials are to end up on IMDb.
I'm not sure even what the process is when it comes to updating details, because I found out, within the last month, I have an IMDb.
There you go.
Which I didn't create because I was a producer on a series.
And that's what happens,
And I don't know who controlled, but it has no details about me other than my name under different credentials. It just has producer, and it has Scared Houseless, the series I co-produced.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, let me at least submit, because I do have an account with them. I thought, well, let me at least submit information. I mean, they accepted my website. So if you look me up at IMDb, there's a link to chrisabalo.com. But I submitted a photo and, some other just details just to fill it out a little bit.
Yeah.
And, none of that went. None of that's gone through yet. It's been
very,
a month.
Very strange. Yeah.
To be honest, I'm not sure what the process is.
I don't either.
I'm not 100%.
And I don't really much care to tell you.
As long as you're working. I'm sorry, I jumped right in when you were talking about playing a bad guy.
Oh no, I've played bad guys. I think my first bad guy, I was an evil child molester on an old courtroom show that was on back in the 70s. I was supposed to look real innocent. Mm-hmm. That you would never believe I was actually the bad guy.
Right.
And the best part was when I got to turn and go, that's me, you know, that kind of stuff. But
the reveal at the end, he was guilty.
And I got to play kind of a bad guy on the series Cold Case a few years ago.
Right.
Where I was not a bad guy, but I wasn't a very nice person.
Mm-hmm.
And I like playing bad guys. And I don't get the opportunity because I have the castable face of a likable person, which is totally nonsense, but it's just the way it is, you know, and you are limited by your actual appearance.
Yeah.
Even though most
yeah.
actors don't want to hear that, it is absolutely true.
Yeah.
You know, you don't look like an axe murderer. Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. What does an axe murderer look like? I always tell a guy, if Hollywood says you look like an axe murderer, mm-hmm. you're going to play nothing but axe murderers.
Sure.
And that's what you're going to be. You know, if you got that crazy look. Some people were able to kind of get out of it. I'm trying to think of a great one. Steve Buscemi.
Yeah.
All he could ever play was crazy, weird,
yeah, like
you know,
Jeffrey
people.
Dahmer types.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you're going to look for an axe murderer, then you hired Steve. But he was kind of able to work his way out of that into other things, and
oh,
especially
yeah.
comedy and stuff, which he's actually quite good at.
No, he is.
Quite good.
He did.
And, yeah. But it's just you are what you are.
You know, it's funny, too, that you mentioned Steve Buscemi, because it's one of those kind of preconceived notions, because I even with doing voice acting, like for a while, I was reticent to even refer to myself as being an actor, just because I thought there's a whole set of perceptions that come with that when it comes to how other people view you.
Oh, that's true.
But the thing is, when you say, if someone says, I want to be an actor, I want to be an actress, everyone immediately thinks you want to be leading man, leading
oh,
lady,
star.
Whatever. Yeah,
yeah
everybody
star.
Looks at movie star.
Yes.
That's where everybody leaps to. Not to say it's wrong.
No.
But when you, I mean, if Steve Buscemi says, I'm going to go to Los Angeles or New York and I'm going to be an actor.
Well,
I'm sure there must have been a couple of guffaws when he got in the car and headed home.
Yeah, like he's going to be an actor.
Yeah, like him. I think he's Cary Grant.
Yeah, yeah but that's exactly, yeah, I think most people think of movie stars and where, in fact, 99% of actors in the world, nobody even knows who they are.
Yeah, you just mean, schmoes.
They just,
no offense.
Just, yeah, just, as we always used to say, that guy. He's that guy.
Yeah.
And
two documentaries,
and
that
there's
guy,
nothing
by the way.
Absolutely wrong with being that guy. I've been him many, 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 many times, and it's perfectly okay. You know, you know, but I would love to be a bad guy. I'd love to be an axe murderer and be hunted down by, you know, mm-hmm. Tommy Lee Jones through the woods and stuff. It'd be okay.
I think yeah. we should rally, because I know you're a huge fan of Justified, as we talked about
oh,
last time.
Oh,
and that,
I love
yeah,
that, show.
That time has passed. We got to figure out, we got to talk to the Blacklist people and get you on there, because that's my current favorite show. I mean,
yeah, I love that show too. I love the way they dig some unused actors out of the woodpile and put them to work. It's
yeah.
just wonderful. And downside for me, and it shoots in New York.
Yeah.
And unless yeah. you're for them actually to take an actor to another city or another town,
mm-hmm.
they got to be nobody there that they could hire.
Yeah.
I mean, that's literally what it comes down to.
Yeah, which is a drag.
Many times I've been placed on what's called a waiting hold to see if they couldn't find somebody and where they were.
Local, right.
Yeah, before they... that happened on a George Clooney movie, the political one. Where
Michael
he was,
Clayton?
No, the where he was running for president.
Ides of March?
That's yeah. the one. And they were shooting in Ohio and Indiana, and I got a call. Could you videotape yourself playing this part real fast and send it?
Mm-hmm.
Then I realized what they were doing. They were trying to find somebody there, but they were looking for a backup.
Ah.
It was his opponent, a candidate.
Oh, right.
Yeah, in a little debate situation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I, of course, jumped right in, taped my little audition, and set mm-hmm. it off. And, of course, then all of a sudden you never hear anything. So that's
yeah,
the way it works.
That's
you know?
That's the nature of
but
it.
But that's you get so you can't even care. People say, don't you get worried? Don't you fret? Don't you want to know? No. The minute you walk out the door, you have to let go of it.
Yeah.
It's gone. Wasn't even here. Never happened. And then, because that has actually happened to me, where my agent will call and go, okay, they want to book you on that job. And I'll go, what job is that?
Yeah.
I don't know what he's talking about. You know, where you played the minister in the small town. And oh, yeah. You know, I mean, you really let it go. You have to.
Yeah.
It's hard to do when you're new and you're young. You keep thinking, I wonder what I did wrong. I wonder what I did right. He didn't do anything wrong.
It very rarely has a lot to do with you.
Yeah.
They know what they're looking for. When
and
they see it, they'll
they
know.
They see it, they know it. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
So all you can do is go in and do
yeah.
whatever it is you do. It's like I had, same thing. I had, my agent did an availability check for something.
Yeah.
And I had to ask, well, which one is it?
Yeah.
And then when he told me, I clicked, I was like, oh, yeah, I read that like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, and or sometimes in features, it could be months ago.
Oh, yeah.
TV is right now, but features are sometimes months out, and you forget. You really forget.
Yeah. Because it's one of the things I've said on here, you know, with a lot of performers and whatnot have come on, actors, writers, et cetera.
Sure.
And they've all said the same thing, but it's one of the things I like to kind of emphasize to people. It's not about, you can't live and die by your auditions.
Yeah.
You need to say, even if you're out here or if you're coming out here for anything, you have to set yourself up so your life is good.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can't put too much, because there's too much of it that's out of your hands. Virtually all of it is out of your hands.
You
can do whatever it is.
You can lose a job because you're too short, too tall. Your eyes are the wrong color because the actor you're working with is short or tall. Or, you know, I mean, it's impossible to actually know something, you know. The only time they're ever going to tell you the truth is if they know you very, very well.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. And I've had that happen. I remember when, because I'd been on Star Trek Next Generation, they were casting what was the one that came after that?
Deep Space Nine.
No, Deep Space Nine was already on.
They ran together?
Well,
okay.
They were overlapped a couple of years.
Voyager?
Yeah, it would have been Voyager.
Okay.
And the casting director from Star Trek brought me in. And I had to learn to speak. It was a throat, yeah, because Voyager. No, was it or the second one with Scott Bakula? It was before. It was a predecessor one,
right? It was supposed to happen before the next.
Well,
I can't remember the name of it.
They didn't have the automatic translators to translate whatever foreign or space language you were speaking.
Right.
And so they wanted me to learn to speak some god awful foreign thing, you know, where you go, you know, this kind of stuff, and actually believe it, you know, like when they do Klingon and
right.
stuff. And
how am I going to sell this?
You know,
I don't even understand.
And I did it, and the guy looked at me, he goes, I've known him for so many years, he goes, there'll be other opportunities. Which actually was fine because I didn't feel right doing it anyway. I knew it was stupid and ludicrous, and I just couldn't buy into it. And so that kind of ruins it right there.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think a lot of times being the audience, you can watch something
say
that person doesn't fit.
That's
or you
right.
can say, I mean,
that's
especially
somebody's
when,
girlfriend or somebody's, it's a favor.
And yeah,
favor
it can take you out of if you see, or same thing when it's like with, I mean, one of the more infamous examples of late was in the last three Star Wars movies where it's like Hayden Christensen, Natalie Portman, zero chemistry.
Oh,
I was like, there's nothing going on.
That's true.
And ultimately, he virtually almost dies
for this woman,
she dies. But there's no anything. It's just like, it's like you could tell. And that's one of those things where it's like, that's why they do chemistry reads.
Well, chemistry is, it's absolutely incredible. Project I'm working on right now couldn't possibly work without chemistry. I can't tell you much about it because I have a non-disclosure agreement.
No, for sure, yeah.
I'm doing a pilot, and I'm one of the two leads, which most people will find absolutely impossible to believe, but it's about two older guys, and it took a long time to cast it because the two guys had to actually... First of all, you're supposed to know each other for 40 years. Black guy and a white guy, working in the same business for 40 years, and they retire, and then this is the story after they retire to go off to do something else. That's as much as I can say. But the fact is, if you've known each other for 40 years, you've, you know, busted each other's balls for 40 years, you've, you know, been to each other's house, you've known your children.
You have a shorthand with each other.
No, that's
you have your inside
and
jokes.
And you've got to know how to do that. And they paired me up initially with the fellow, Lou Beattie Jr. is his name. I can give you that. Look him up on IMDb. He's got a lot of zillion credits, too.
You can see half his credits
half
on
his
IMDb.
Credits at Lou Beattie. And he is such a great guy, and we really hit it off from day one. And they knew we worked together well, but they kept pairing us up with other people. Now we're going to put you with this guy. Now we're going to put you with this guy, over and over and over again. So when it gets to that point, you know they're very interested. You just don't know what they're looking for. You really still don't know. And then finally the director said one day, in one of the last auditions, he goes, I don't know why we're doing this. He goes, we've already got the two guys. That this is it.
Right.
Because we can read each other's minds. I can't even explain it. You know, and
is exactly like old friends.
That's it. And this show's about, I don't know, 40% improv. And so you've got to have somebody that can jump right
in.
You can patter, or at least give you a look to kill the powder, which on TV you can do, like, oh, please look, you know, where you roll your eyes. But you got to be able to do that. And we shot the pilot, we shot the first piece of it a couple of months ago, and then we got some interest, and we've added more scenes and more scenes, and we just shot two more scenes this past week out in the desert near Acton, and that's one place you never want to spend a day, you know, just on your own. Nothing wrong with Acton. But it's out there, and there's a whole lot of nothing out there. But no Acton people calling me, because I know it's a big movie community. Please, I don't take, no threats. I have friends there.
He's just saying don't go there looking for stuff. If you're working, it's
unless you want to visit Vasquez Rocks, one of the greatest locations on the face of the earth, which is almost to Acton, and but it's not in Acton, and but it's so important to have that chemistry with people, and I've had it with even big stars. You get on a show, and there's just some reason it just clicks. It just works. I mean, you have such an ease with somebody, and you can have it with a not important actor, and you can have it with an important actor.
Right.
And it's so much better when you actually do click. Oh, it's so much better. Because trying to fight your way, like you say, people with no chemistry, the audience is going to look and go, those two people wouldn't be together under any circumstances on the face of the earth. Why would you ever put them together?
Yeah.
Why?
It's one of those things I've said repeatedly. Like, everybody sets out to make a great movie, great TV show.
Oh, nobody does a bad one.
Yeah, nobody signs on or gets something started and hopes it's not going to turn out. But the amount of things that need to go right in order for it to be good. Great, not classic, just good.
Yeah.
There's so many variables that need to line up.
Yeah, you rarely get really good.
Yeah.
All you hope for is good.
Yeah.
That was good. I like that.
Every year, how many movies can you name at the end of the year? It's like, that was a good movie, you know, that you went and saw and now we're closing in the end of the year. When you look back not asking for a list, but like when you look back, it's just like, how many movies were really good? How many good movies I see this year? How
not
many good books?
Many,
how many good
true.
TV yeah. shows? Yeah.
Well, and you do movies. I did a movie. In fact, I'm so amazed they haven't released it yet. I did this movie 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Low budget movie. I think it's in the IMDb, but nobody's ever seen this movie. It's called Price to Pay. It's a good title.
Jason Statham movie?
No.
Just a guess.
Director was Michael McCready, that's not his business. He was like a guy that just got this whole thing together. Mm. But the girl who stars in it at the time was totally unknown, and I thought, and she was real pretty and cute, and it's a pretty clever movie. I actually thought it was pretty good. Never was released. Then she up and married Johnny Depp. Amber Heard.
Yes, yeah.
And I'm thinking, if I own this movie, I would be, right now, I don't care if it's going straight to DVD,
sure.
if it's going to stream, you're going to go with that. Because she's in a lot of movies right now.
She is.
Being married to Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, why wouldn't you take that... what
you would
got
think.
And use it. But I don't even know who owns the movie. Don't even know who owns it.
And there's enough options now. Like, there's a lot of, it's like in the last few years especially, it's been, like, Netflix has been buying up movies at film festivals. Like, I have a friend who, he just announced it yesterday, actually, who I'm trying to get on as well, another on-screen actor. And a movie he shot earlier this year just got into Sundance.
Yeah.
So he's thrilled. And that's one of the places where specifically Netflix is buying up movies just to put them out there.
Well, even some of the other channels buy them up. I did this movie that was based on an old Erskine Caldwell novel called The Sure Hand of God from like the 40s or 50s. Had some good actors in it. Gail O'Grady and just good people. Dan Roebuck, who's most people who know character actors would know him. Mm-hmm. And we shot it, and it just sat and went away. And, you know, you forget about it after a while. Mm-hmm. We were supposed to be in a small Texas town somewhere. And I had a really good part in that movie, I must say. And then one day I got a call from one of the producers saying, Lifetime just bought this movie. Because it's kind of a female-oriented woman about, she's kind of the town pariah.
She
rises above it.
Which is every Lifetime movie.
Yeah, every Lifetime movie. But they don't like the title. They're changing the title. And I said, I don't care.
Yeah.
No, I don't care. Yeah. And they misspelled my name in the credits. I don't care, because as long as the checks come, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Maybe that one isn't on there because they misspelled my name. I don't know. I think it is.
If it's spelled
IMDb.
Right on the check.
And then you say, well, it was filmed as The Sure Hand of God, but it aired on Lifetime as, get ready for this, one of the worst titles in the world.
I'm ready.
Even Sinners Have Friends.
That's not a very Lifetime title at all.
And when I heard that, I thought I was going to die. But there it was, and it's there.
Wow.
And, you know.
Between the two names, I can't help but think the brain trust of Lifetime would.
Yeah.
I guess the idea is it's a story about redemption, but that's a little wacky title.
It was.
I mean.
And a lot, there were a lot. I'm trying to think of the daughter. She's become very famous. She was on House, and now she has Once Upon a Time. She's the star.
Oh, I could picture it. I can't think of her name.
Yes, I can too. But she was the she was this woman's daughter in this mm-hmm. movie. Yes, I think it was her first big part, or even a small part.
Mm-hmm.
And you see people in these movies, and you say, they go on. Look what they go on to. You know, some people have endurance and they have the likability factor, and they're able to continue on.
Right. Some people can marry Johnny Depp, and it doesn't matter if their movies never
get
released.
It doesn't
matter
if it ever gets out of here.
And other people, you know, end up headlining their own shows after batting around for years, like Scandal, which you were on, loved show.
And that was an interesting show to do, too. And I worked with the director before. And we were doing a scene. I played an executive who was accused of killing a hooker, as if I would ever do something.
Well,
so I was kind of a bad
guy. That's why it's called acting.
kind of a bad guy. I remember Carrie's questioning me, and she's going, I had my lawyers there. Another lawyer, but you know, she's the fixer, so she's gonna fix this. Did you know this person? Well, yeah, I did, but I didn't kill her. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I had a relationship. Well, it wasn't a relationship, but, you know, it was one of those
technically
kind of
a business relationship.
Business relationship. I didn't kill her.
Tug it on your collar.
Yeah, and what were you doing when she died? Well, I was there, but I, you know, not at that exact moment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was one of those kind of things. Mm-hmm. But it was so fun. And the director I'd worked with on the old series Providence, which I had many episodes of, I was a very arrogant. Oh, I loved him. He was an arrogant chef. You know, you don't know what you're doing. I'm the most perfect chef in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a very fun run with that because the star's sister was going to cooking school to be a chef. And they always had these scenes in chef school. And it was me. And the producer of that was he and his brother are both Randy Zisk. And there's another Zisk, and he did Weeds, so I knew all the Zisk brothers.
Yeah, and you had a run on Weeds as well.
I did have a run on Weeds, and so I'd worked with Randy Zisk, and he was doing the Scandal episode, and we're sitting lining up a shot or doing something, and the guy on Scandal, the nasty one though, the bad guy.
I
can't think of his name.
Yeah, I'm drawing
Guillermo a blank, or whatever his name mm-hmm. is. He was on Weeds, too. So it's
cool.
Amazing how you go from show to show.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, he killed me on Weeds. And I was very put out by that. But Carrie says, I'd mentioned I'd been on other shows with Randy Zisk. And I'd worked with both Zisk brothers. Somehow that came up. And right in front of Randy Zisk, Kerry Washington goes, which one you like better? And Randy stops and he turns and looks at me mm-hmm. and I go, well, Randy, it goes without saying.
Yeah,
of course.
Tremendous, of course. Yeah, he's an underappreciated force of nature in this business.
That's right. And she goes, boy, you really know how to play this game, don't you? And I said, yes, I do. Thank you very much.
That's how you survive.
Yeah, yeah. And, oh, God, yes. But that was fun. And, you know, and so you just show, as you say, and it becomes your slogan. You show up and you suit up.
Mm.
You know, that's what you got to do, you know. And a most recent TV appearance, probably, it might be somebody that actually knows it. It's on Comedy Central. The show is called Review with Andy Daly.
Right.
Where he's a reviewer, but he doesn't review movies or TV. He reviews life
mm-hmm.
and his place in it, and which is kind of a strange concept. And I'd never heard of it, never saw it. got a, just a call out of the blue one day. They would like you to play Crazy Uncle Walter on review. And I didn't even know what it was, mm-hmm. but I knew there was a paycheck involved. And I said,
sure.
I'd be happy to be Crazy Uncle Walter. And I didn't have to audition, didn't do anything.
Oh,
just
well,
a straight offer,
that's,
you
yes.
know?
And, the answer is yes.
After you've been around a while, you get more and more and more of those, by the way, where you don't have to actually go. In fact, Scandal was a straight offer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a straight offer because I'd known those casting people and some of the people involved forever. And all they think of, they run it through their mind and go, can he do this? Yeah, he can do this. You know, and that's really what it comes
right.
down to.
And then you get to bypass the process.
And you get to bypass the process. And the process is, I still have to do it. I still have to do it. But nowadays, though, you're seeing named stars auditioning. People who've been series regulars on shows, and they still have to go out and show what they can do. And I find that appalling, but it didn't used to be that way.
Right.
Yeah, it didn't used to be that way.
It's, now I'm drawing a blank on his name. He's on Criminal Minds. Is it Shamar Moore? Is that who I'm thinking of?
The black guy.
Yes.
Yes. That's
okay.
Him. Yes.
Yes.
That's him. Yes.
I saw he was doing an interview. He was on a show. I was working on a talk show, and he mentioned because he just got an Instagram account, and he said, "Well, I just started it because he's like every time I go into audition, I'm asked how many people follow you on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, blah blah." And I'm thinking, number one, I know it is Shamar Moore. I know him. Because he was on, I don't remember which CBS soap opera my mother watched back in the day, but I knew of him by face and by name
from
25 years ago. And I thought, here's a guy, and Criminal Minds has been on for like 12 years or something.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, aside from everything else, which I'm like, I guess now they want you to bring something more to the table than just your chops. They want you to bring an audience.
That's
but
what
I
they
thought.
Want.
He still got an audition? Like, that's one of those things where I thought, like
yes,
he said,
yes.
long runs on series, and they're still...
I've been in the audition room or the waiting room with people that you would not believe in a million years would have to audition for something.
Really?
Famous people. Anybody John could... O'Hurley. From Seinfeld.
That's another name.
He was with the silver hair. Mm-hmm. He was Mr. Elaine's boss.
Yeah.
Who's just funny and hysterical and been on a million shows.
Right. And everybody's seen Seinfeld. So
everybody. And he still has to go out and audition.
Really?
Yeah. And it's just astounding to me, you know. The great actor Hector Elizondo, though. I remember talking to him one day about it once, and he said, talk about that guy. But he's on, what is he on now, with Tim Allen?
The old guy,
the boss.
Right.
And Hector's a great character actor. We were talking about auditioning, and he said, I will take a meeting. Mm-hmm. I will have lunch. I will babysit your children. I will water your lawn. But I will not audition for you. But see, he's the kind of guy that can get away with
that. Right,
right. Yeah. I will not audition for you. He considers it at this point of his life an insult.
Oh, sure.
And it is.
When you have such decades of a career behind you and notable.
Hundreds of hours.
And you've been in every Gary Marshall movie.
You've been on Broadway and you've been, and it's just an amazing thing. Yeah.
Like, because then it's, there's a point where it's like, well, what do you need to know?
What do you need to know?
What do you need to see that you can't find in
I mentioned this the last time. One of the greatest character actors in the world is Hal Holbrook.
Mm, of course.
Who's, Oscar winner and everything. And he says, I was talking to him one day, and it's fortunate on shows where you get to sit and talk to people like this.
Sure, yeah.
And we were talking about our dish. He said, I had to go in recently. And I walk in, and everybody in the room is 15, the producers and writers.
Sure.
He says, and I can't hold it against them because they really don't know me.
Hmm.
And the director, young director, looks up and says, well, Hal, what would we know you from? And he says, I think I'm going to start taking my Oscar to the auditions with me.
There you go.
And just set it up on the table,
mm-hmm.
And he says... He says, where do I start? Where do I...
Mm-hmm.
He says, without sounding like the biggest braggart on the face of the earth, Tonys, Emmys, Oscars. I think he's not the four for... He doesn't have the Grammy, but he's got three.
He's got the other three.
It's like one of the most beloved character actors on the face of the earth, and nobody knows who he is. Which tells you the casting people today, they don't know what came before.
There's a really weird divide when it comes to what I'm going to put this on millennials slash Generation Y.
Yes.
Where they don't know anything they didn't come up with.
Yes.
And they don't want to know anything that they didn't come up with.
It's right. And it's like when people see a black and white movie, they go, but it's in black and white.
Yeah.
Well, what's that got to do with anything?
Yeah, that's not it. That's just an aesthetic.
Some of the greatest movies ever made were in black and white.
Of course.
You know, and it's like, wow. Because people think, well, that's old-fashioned. It's old-fashioned.
Yeah, but that's... there's such a weird... I mean, it's strange for me not being... I mean, I'm 34, so it's not that long ago that I... You know, I graduated high school in 2000.
Yeah.
So it's not that strange. But, I mean, I still... I mean, even when it came to music, the first thing I did was go back and listen to the stuff.
Well,
it's just like, it's like, what's that? All right, Eric Clapton was in Cream, and he listened to a lot of Robert Johnson, and then you go back and you did all stuff. And now it's when everybody has something the size of a matchbox in their pocket where they can look up this information.
Anything they want.
And they don't.
Yep, they don't.
It's astounding to me how there's
You're
just...
absolutely correct.
And
it's,
especially when you can look, just be like, you know, Hal Holbrook, it's like, wow, he has 6,000 credits.
They,
like,
yeah, exactly.
And
that's
just TV and film.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
And it's funny, but it's like, if you're not doing something current, you're completely off the radar.
But then again, there are some young people who do it right. They learn from... When I first went to acting, tried to take it seriously, had a great acting teacher, who's also a fantastic actor, long gone now, but he insisted that you start from the beginning. If you're going to be an actor, it seemed crazy, but we would do classes for 5 or 6 weeks on nothing but the Greek plays, the Greek tragedies. You have to learn where it all came from. That was the beginning of acting, basically.
That's smart.
And then you went to the Restoration comedies. You went to the Shakespeare. You studied it linearly all the way down through there. And it seemed crazy at the time. But then you learn there's something to be learned from every one of those eras and something to treasure in every one of those eras. And so we learn from the beginning. And in film school, when I went to film school, you'd sit for hours watching great movies. We were talking before we started taping about writing teachers, and it's Robert McKee or McGee. I think it's McKee,
yes.
He does something in his class. I took it so long ago. Where you watch great movies and watch why they're great. Why are they great? And even from a cinematic thing, and we watched one of the true legends, Casablanca. And then he would stop the frame and say, look at this frame. What's the lighting in Rick's Cafe? What is that?
Hmm.
Because for people who don't know the movie, it's when all the French people were being held in, the Nazis were ruling the world in the Second World War, but in this small part of Casablanca, it was still relatively free, but you were surrounded, and you were basically a prisoner in the city of Casablanca. You couldn't get in, you couldn't get out. And the lighting was so specific, and just something never one thinks about. There were like slits on the wall, black pieces of light. He said, those are the bars of confinement.
Huh.
They're in prison, and they don't even know it in a bar.
Right.
And there was a scene with him and Ingrid Bergman driving a car, and they used a right-hand drive car so that she could be on the right side of the screen. Because they said the placement of the actors was so... nobody thinks about that these days. Mm-hmm. Because the most powerful part of the frame was the right upper quadrant, and that's where Ingrid Bergman was in the scenes driving in the car. They said, I mean, I learned so much just from things like that.
Right.
Like, wow, you never think about the placement of the camera. And I did a Coen Brothers movie, which was shot in black and white. And it was the same thing, the detail. The great Roger Deakins shot it for people who love camera people and cinematographers. Don't get any better than that. And but they used the old 10K Klieg lights from the 30s to get that deep black shadows on one side of your face, those great film noir movies, you know.
Right.
And they shot it that way in the 2000s. I mean, that's what's amazing.
Yeah, I think
amazing.
It was The Man Who Wasn't There,
the man
for
who
those
wasn't
wondering.
There.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's 2001, I believe.
Has it been that long? Boy, am I getting old. But it was so much fun to shoot. working on, you know, I was the district attorney opposite Tony Shalhoub, who was the most expensive defense attorney in Sacramento. And it took supposed to be 1946. So it was great fun. We got the, it was act old fashioned, you know,
right.
And it was really, really great fun. But yeah, people don't learn their business. And especially, I don't think so many people in casting are just start as secretaries, and you can't blame them, and they become casting directors. They don't know who came right. before. They don't know. And they don't take the time to find out, you know.
Yeah, that's the more frustrating
yeah,
part.
Yeah, where the only time they would is if the director says, find me a, you know, a William Bendix type. And they'll go, who, what? You know, you have to go back to the 30s or 40s. Mm. Then you might have to do a little homework.
Yeah.
And learn something. But, you know, it's amazing, the business. I don't know. If I were starting today, I think I'd be very frightened.
It's strange. I mean, on the one hand, there's all the outlets. You can
yeah.
produce your own content.
Oh, yes.
You put on YouTube. We can do
yes.
this. And I can distribute a show on my own independently
yep.
online. There are avenues for content aside from thousands of channels that have 24-hour programming.
Yep.
There's Netflix and Amazon and Hulu. They're all doing original programming, you know, it's via a subscription model.
Sure.
And, you know, HBO has been killing it for
the
last 15 years. Yeah.
Well, there's a funny thing. I was used to do this series of educational films for Disney. They did educational films. They made a lot of money. They were union, wonderful
mm-hmm.
educational films. This would have been in the 70s. And I did many, many of these things. They liked the way I did them, and I became like the regular guy to teach kids about economics and nonsense. And the producer and director were man and wife. And the wife had been a longtime producer of stuff, and she started telling me one day about this idea she had. And nobody had private television or pay TV. This was unheard of. This is all
right.
pre-anything. And she tried to explained to a bunch of us sitting at lunch one day, I'm going to go together with these guys and we're going to form this company and we're going to have people have to pay to watch it. And you're like, oh, yeah, well, that's going to work.
Yeah.
And we're going to call it Home Box Office.
Ah.
Which is what it was long before it was HBO.
Mm-hmm.
Home Box Office. She's one of the people who put it all together.
You know, it's so funny. I was going through, I'm almost done with it, A Carlin Home Companion, written by Kelly Carlin, daughter of George.
Yes,
and
indeed.
She said with, when it came to the HBO specials, they didn't know what it was. They filmed them at, I forget what school, UCLA, USC, I'm trying to think his first special. And she said it was it wasn't even a blip on the radar. I don't even remember it being
not
a big deal that they were even filming his stand-up.
Not
it wasn't
important.
Like there wasn't a major discussion.
Yeah.
And then they did a second one a year later, and there was a little more about it because she was involved in a lot, you know, being a teenager, she was able to work in some capacity on it. But it was a little bit of a bigger deal, but nobody knew it was going to go anywhere circa the late 70s.
No. Yeah. Well, I'm assuming that this woman has got a lot of money now.
I would have thought so, yeah.
I think she and the original people sold out pretty fast.
Yeah,
I think, when somebody comes along and offers you a few million dollars, you have a tendency to take it.
That's literally the American dream.
And it is the American
dream. I've created something, and someone else is going to buy me for tremendous profit.
Let me give you $50 million for this. Okay.
Okay, sold. Yeah,
sold. When do we close? Tomorrow? I'll put the check in the mail.
All right. Yeah. I'm just going to dial up Expedia and get myself a flight.
That's exactly right.
Month-long vacation.
Not that I would ever do anything like that.
No, not. You're an artist.
No.
It's different.
Not at all.
There you have it, part one. And next week, Rick's going to be talking about working with up-and-comers like Clint Eastwood, Hugh Jackman, Joan Cusack, Catherine Zeta-Jones, someone named Jim Carrey, and even drops this terrific nugget that Ridley Scott shared about auditioning and getting the part. You don't want to miss that because it's actually pretty incredible. So check out part two next Monday. Please follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr at KPod. Like the show on Facebook. Please share. Please subscribe. And visit chrisabal.com to check out all sorts of stuff that's there, including my guide to essential holiday viewing, which is also featured on the homepage. Because it's still a few weeks to enjoy yourself. amid all the stress and what have you. But that's it. So until next week, for Rick Scarry, this is Chris Abalo, and this was yet another experiment.